Welcome to the Commander and MTG podcast, everyone. I'm Phil DeLuca, and my fellow hosts are...
Nate Burgess.
And Sean Kirkopane-Watson.
We're your friendly neighborhood Commander community-oriented podcast, and we will put a spotlight on the goings-on of the EDH Commander community. Each episode, we'll talk about topics you want to hear about and focus on listener contributions. But before we get started, I wanted to take a few minutes for us to allow us to introduce ourselves. I'm Phil DeLuca. I first started playing Magic from 1994 to 1996. I actually got out when Chronicles was released basically took a break for 17 years. Came back in again in 2013 specifically to play Commander. I've played a lot of games, and Magic the Gathering is the best game I've ever played, and I think it's the best game you can play right now. It's very complex, but still the best game. And Commander is the best format of MTG. In terms of my play style, I'm a kind of a green-white player, mostly green. I like big sledgehammers, a touch of red, and even when I play the other colors, I play them like they're green. I won't name those colors, though. I don't like them. I most recently in a Magic context, yeah. Who knows what they could be?
I know.
Yeah, you do. I recently co-founded and co-hosted the Five Commanders podcast, and I'm looking forward to working with my new partners. And so, why don't you introduce yourself, Nate?
Hi, I'm Nate Burgess. I'm a longtime gamer, so much so that I made it my day job. I started playing Magic the Gathering in the early 90s, and then I took a long break. I sold all my cards. And then recently, Phil got me back into EDH, and I'm relearning the new cards and the rules because I haven't been drilling them into my brain for the last 20 years. You can consider me the intelligent newbie of the group, and these guys say that I'm a Rakdos-style player of black and red for various reasons.
Yeah.
We say that something because about it's the... true.
Nate likes to kill things and kind of likes to make a big show of it when he does.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sean.
Yeah, so my name is Sean Kirkopane-Watson. That middle name, the silly bit, is because I'm a roller derby player, and that's my roller derby handle. I'm a long-term gamer since I was a small child. Then I... got into Magic in a big way during the Urza's Block, so I was born in the fires of Tolarian Academies and Palinkron Infinite Loops and all that shenanigans.
You poor man.
Poor man. It's made me the man I am. I'm an ex-Games Workshop employee. I might have already said that. I've forgotten. But yeah, I worked for Games Workshop for several years and got into Warhammer and miniature gaming for a long time and tabletop role-playing as well. Then I discovered girls and got out of Magic and gaming for a long time and followed that cliche. And then...
Aww. Wait, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, when you're a teenager, you know, you've got only a little bit of money and there's a rule in England that you're only allowed one interest at a time as well.
Oh, yeah.
As you know. But, yeah, so from a Magic perspective, I got back into Standard during Theros Block. And the end of Return to Ravnica, and Standard, you need to remortgage a house to play. So me and some friends started playing EDH just as a sort of casual multiplayer format, because we enjoy playing multiplayer mostly anyway. And it just took over. The format got into our souls and spread, and eventually we all just canned the Standard and just invested all our time, money and energy into having a really good EDH group. I am a self-confessed, but I'm sure others would tell you as well, incredibly demure man, so blue-black the whole way. I love control strategies. I'm having my most fun when my opponents are having their least fun. Is how a cynic might say it, but I like to say it as I consider it a challenge to stop you so I can win. Ha ha ha. And also, as you could probably tell by my accent, I am a loyal servant of Her Royal Highness Elizabeth II and plan to retake America for the Empire at the nearest possible convenience.
Hey.
So, that's me.
And you are not a vindictive bastard, are you?
No, definitely not a vindictive bastard.
He's not sarcastic either.
No, definitely. Sarcasm is neither big nor clever, Nate.
Mm-mm.
I do have a reputation for if you wrong me in a game, I will go after you for the next few. But, you know, don't wrong me.
Right, that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And what qualifies as wronging you? Is it playing a basic mountain?
I'm not quite as harsh as some. The one thing you can do if you're ever playing me that will guarantee I'll see red for a while is to pointlessly blow my shit up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you do it just because, well, I've got this disenchantment hand, and even though we're at parity and it's not going to help me at all, I'm going to kill that, I don't know. Oh, sorry, disenchant's a bad example. A return to dust in my hand, I'm going to exile that stuffy doll that isn't even locked on to me, then we're not going to be friends.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, what can I say?
It's also generally, generally speaking, a good idea not to play infinite combos against you.
Oh, if you do that, I'll have you. I'll have you so bad. Oh, that you've just. In the interest of history, I was a listener to the Five Commanders podcast, and I think a loyal listener to that podcast, and that's actually how I met Phil. And I emailed in once about dealing with a player in my playgroup who used a lot of infinite loops and tried to stick them in. And the suggestion from that podcast was just kill the bastard, basically. And it worked really well. Almost too well. And it's now part of my identity as a player. It's like, right, if you're going to infinite out, I'm going to get you. And I'm going to point out to everyone, as soon as you play with that deck again, get him. But anyway, I'm rambling now, so without further ado.
Yes. Well, in the future, we'll have a larger focus on the community and our listeners, and next episode, I think you'll see more of that. For now, what we're going to do is introduce a segment, and Sean, you're going to introduce this segment.
Yes, I am. So, this segment is called The Watch List. Okay, so if you read anything with the MTG Rules Committee or listen to people like Sheldon Mennery, praise be him, speak, they refer to a thing called the watch list they have, which is, I guess, a list of an indeterminate number of cards which they're considering for at least a discussion amongst their Rules Committee about.
Now, formally, they don't have a watch list. That would imply they're keeping a list of cards ready to be examined in their meetings for banning from Commander.
Yeah, I don't think this is a discussion about cards worth banning, but I think from what I've gathered, it's the individual Rules Committee members have come across cards that appear to be affecting the format in some way. The cynic might say warping the format, and just bring them up at their meetings to discuss. Yeah, so I thought it would be fun if we looked at a card which, now we have no insider information that this is on anyone's watch list, but that I would put on a watch list and discuss its value and its effect on the meta. So the first card for the watch list will be...
Dun, dun, dun.
will be... Bribery. That's right, bribery. Nate, what does bribery do?
Well, bribery is three colorless and two blue mana. It's a sorcery. And what you do is you search your target opponent's library for a creature card, and you put that card into play under your control. Then that player shuffles his or her library. So basically you look in someone's deck and just, hey, that's a good creature, I'll take that one. It's had an effect on our meta. Because it's a safe bet that if anyone at this table is playing blue, then bribery is going to be in the deck and it's going to be played. And for that reason, I stopped using Blightsteel Colossus.
Yes. That was totally your fault. Man, that was, again, Sean played the bribery, took your Blightsteel Colossus, and beat us all about the face and neck with it. It was terrible.
So Let me explain that situation a little better. So it was early on in me meeting Nate, and we were playing, and I thought, here's a guy who's new back to Magic. He's not going to know some of the basic fundamentals of Commander. Don't stack your deck too well. Someone might have bribery.
Now, these are valuable lessons, and I appreciate them.
Mm. So going through his, I believe it was a Memnarch deck. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, Memnarch. It might have been Memnarch.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
Memnarch.
It was.
Oh yeah. Okay. So going through his Memnarch deck.
It was either that or his. What was it? He was playing Green Ramp at the time.
Oh no, that was just Eldrazi in that deck. But it's an artifact creature, so he was in my Memnarch deck. The Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah, which means it was risky for me because I was stealing something he could potentially in the future steal back. But I was pretty sure I could kill him before that would happen. I was going through his deck was just this smorgasbord of delicious taste nuggets of cards. Just, Blightsteel Colossus. Wormcoil Engine. And... What did I do with your Blightsteel Colossus, Nate? Or perhaps Phil remembers.
Yeah, you ran it right into me, didn't you?
There was something I did with it first, before I killed you.
Oh yeah, the Rite of Replication.
That's the one!
Oh yeah, Jesus.
You've missed a key word in there, which was kicked. Kicked, yeah, Rite kicked. Of Replication. And,
yeah, I remember, like, when you pulled the Blightsteel with a bribery, I was like, Nate, this is all your fault. And then he when he righted it, I kind of flipped out. I was like, Nate, you see what you've done?
Yep.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I might have a screenshot of that somewhere.
You probably do. So how do we counter bribery?
Well,
what are our options?
The final thought on that card is I think that story perfectly encompasses what is right and wrong with bribery all at once.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we all use bribery now.
It's in every blue deck I own.
Yep.
Every, and that's all.
I use bribery.
Yeah, you do.
So, before we go on to the counters, I think, what are the contentious points of this card? So what puts it on the watch list, do you think, from people you've played with and against with it? What makes it a card which has such an impact on our format? Whoops. To use a keyword, the form.
I think bribery is actually good for a meta, especially if more than one person has it, because it prevents people from playing, or at least deters them from playing those big creatures like Blightsteel Colossus and other one-shot kill critters. Like, I think with the advent of a Tarkar World Render, I think we're going to see a lot more briberies again, because anybody playing green and red is probably going to be playing an Atarka World Render, and so you might as well be the one who controls it, right? I don't think that bribery in and of itself is terrible, except for that feeling of violation and the dark laughter that Sean and Nate are famous for when they play it. But, you know, other than that, that kind of, that theft, that feeling of somebody's been in your house and has taken your favorite box of Magic cards.
I'm in your deck.
Yeah.
Taking your stuff.
Stealing your stuff.
Can I add something quickly onto that as well? If in your meta at home, listeners, because this has happened in my paper meta, because obviously I don't live in LA, so I just play online with these two guys. In your paper meta, if you're the guy that's sitting there going, every time someone casts bribery, it's always at my goddamn deck. Why is that? You're the problem, not
you
the card.
You are the problem.
That's just my two cents on that.
No, that's totally fair.
Yeah. It's kind of a joke in certain metas that I've spoken to people about and played in, where everyone, you pull the bribery, cast it, and you go, and always sarcastically look around all the players at the table before turning your head to the right and going, you. Ooh. And that person knows. They know what they've done.
Yeah, they've done it.
They already know what's in their deck and what's going to happen.
So if you've got somebody who plays bribery or a couple of people who play bribery, what do you do to counter it?
Well, the obvious answer, if you can, is just a counter spell when it comes out. Other options, since bribery targets the player, it targets the opponent. If you can make yourself hexproof, and there's a couple of options in white, and there's an artifact that I found. There might be others. Let's see, there's Aegis of the Gods, which is one colorless and one white. It's an enchantment creature, and it's 2/1, just gives you hexproof. So bribery cannot target you. It cannot target your library through you. Another one is Leyline of Sanctity. It's 2 colorless and 2 white enchantment, and you can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. So on, if you're not playing white, you got one artifact that I found. It says Witchbane Orb, and it costs 4. And when it enters the battlefield, destroy all curses attached to you. Yeah, but that's, you know, who cares? But it also gives you hexproof. So those are some hexproof options.
Yeah, I think in white as well, there's Imperial Mask and Ivory Mask, I think does the same thing. So you're good if you're in white. I'm really happy to see the Witchbane Orb, because an artifact with that ability on, that's a card I didn't know, if I'm 100% honest. Yeah, it's that one that might add into the shopping cart for future reference. So any other strategies?
I've seen Witchbane Orb played before. Actually, I've seen all three of these. I play the Aegis a lot, in part because it's the cheapest way to get hexproof. And by cheap, I mean least expensive in terms of mana cost.
Another reason you play Aegis, though, isn't there, Phil? I'm just looking at its card type there.
No. That's only in Karametra. In Karametra Enchantress, specifically, that's a sweet card. Because when you play Aegis of the Gods for 1 and a white, it's an enchantment creature, human soldier. So I get the Karametra trigger for casting a creature spell, and I get the enchantment trigger from my Enchantresses. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. That's a great, great card to draw when you're early on in the game, right after playing Karametra.
Outside of white and artifact, is there any way of giving yourself hexproof?
There's no obvious way to get hexproof in the other colors, but I'm sure our listeners right now are shouting out exceptions. So let us know, listeners. We'll give you some contact information at the end. And definitely let us know, and we'll take the best feedback, which probably includes almost no abuse. And we'll give them a little shout out on the next episode.
There is one easy response, which I think we're probably going to discuss later in the show. But every deck can run it, and that is Homeward Path.
Oh yeah.
Which is a land that you can tap to produce one colorless, or you can pay 1 and tap it to each player gains control of all creatures they own, which is a powerful effect.
Yeah, that's great. And remember, the owner of a card is the person who brought it to the table.
Yes. And there are a few cards in the history of Magic that interact with owner in a strange way. Venza the Sojourner is one, but he's for another day.
Yeah.
Any other ways?
If they're targeting your deck with bribery, and you know you have a Blightsteel Colossus, maybe you can do some kind of instant speed movement from a specific dangerous creature or creatures out of your deck to some other zone. Maybe to your hand, to the battlefield, to the graveyard. One that comes to mind is Entomb, which is just 1 black, and you search your library for a card and put that card into your graveyard. And then you can do that in instant speed.
Yeah, the good thing about that card is if you're running Entomb, you're probably running a graveyard strategy anyway. So hopefully you're getting a win out of that. Doesn't work with your Eldrazi's though, because the Eldrazi will hit your graveyard, then shuffle back into your library.
Well, just the 2 big ones. The other ones are okay.
Oh yeah, the Artisan and stuff. Another card for a similar effect in green, although it's not the cheapest card in the world, is Survive of the Fittest. So to go and instant speed, it's a green enchantment, 1 and a green, pay 1 green, discard a creature card from your hand, tutor a creature card out of your deck and put it into your hand. So to whip all the stuff you don't want your opponent to particularly take out of your library at instant speed, that's a very powerful effect for numerous reasons.
Well, sure, but if you play a bribery when somebody has a Survival of the Fittest out, you're kind of asking for it.
Doing magic wrong.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
That, or you're confident that they have so many broken, quote-unquote broken creatures in their deck that you're going to find something anyway.
And remember, folks, if you're holding a worldly tutor, that doesn't save you from the bribery.
No, it doesn't save you from the derision of your friends, either.
No, and in fact, it might make you more susceptible to it.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good... I think it's kind of hitting bribery on the surface. There's some nice, easy ways to counter it. Although, Entomb, I just checked the price while we were talking, and Entomb is up over $20 right now.
Is it? I've got two of them.
Yeah, well, lucky you. The price I'm looking at right now is a $26, and that's not even for the foil.
Ow.
The foil from the Graveborn is the cheapest of the cards, and it's only $20.
A quick question. What are these dollars you speak of?
Well, it's some play money that we use over here on this side of the pond.
Right. Oh, right. The green stuff. Yeah, gotcha.
Yep. Gotcha. Our artificial economy is based on the trading of meaningless paper back and forth.
Gotcha. Gotcha. As long as you don't have any sinister symbols of the Illuminati on it, it'll be fine.
Oh, no, no, no.
There is one other way, and this is my favorite way of stopping people bribering out of Blightsteel Colossus and smashing you in the face of it, or an Avacyn, or name any number of particularly hurtful things.
Don't drain, force of will.
No, no. Simply just don't run them.
Yeah.
If you have a deck that doesn't run these things, you, or even if for a small amount of time you run decks which don't use those big Eldrazis, Colossi, etc., you're less likely to get targeted by the bribery player.
Sure. I mean, that's feasible up to a point, and if you're playing something like Narset or Jaleva, or maybe Melek, then, you know, obviously you're going to be largely immune to it. But if you're playing a Scion of the Ur-Dragon, or right, or even Maelstrom Wanderer,
I know all about him.
Basically, any kind of a big creature target like that, you're going to end up the target of bribery, and so you need to think about these other ways to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, instant speed removal. I know it's really sucks to use instant speed removal on your own creatures. That considered. I think it's the indestructible ones which then you get a problem with. So mostly Blightsteel Colossus, Darksteel Colossus, and Ulamog.
Ulamog.
Yeah, they're the real tricky numbers there. And Avacyn, of course. I mean,
Avacyn, yeah.
I have beat people to death with their own Avacyn on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
And that, if I know someone's running Avacyn, we've got a guy in our group that runs Kalia, we've got a guy in our group that runs a lot of Bant and Naya decks that all have Avacyn in. And if I know that that's there, they'll be the first target I go for. I know I'll skip past a Blightsteel Colossus to go and get an Avacyn, because its effect is so strong. So
yeah, absolutely.
You need an... I think there's a few cards in Magic. Avacyn's definitely one of them. I'd say Magister Sphinx in EDH. That if you're running them in your deck, you need an answer to your own problem. And if you don't, then don't cry when you get it punched back in your face.
Yeah, my elf Eldrazi deck has a Tajuru Preserver so that I don't have to sacrifice when someone steals my Ulamog.
What color is that? Is that just green colors?
Yeah, it's a green elf. Green elf.
Yeah, that's nice.
What's the commander on that deck?
Oh, that's my Karametra.
I would swap that for a Sigarda, and then... Also, it's not just green colors, it's green white. I would definitely run Sigarda in that deck if you don't already.
Run both of them.
Oh, yeah, Sigarda is so good. Oh, God, Dad, get the Selesnya feelings out of my head. Go away.
So, how do we get the Selesnya feelings out of Sean's head?
Yeah.
Well...
They're enticing me with angels.
Maybe we should talk about a blue and black card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so in this next segment, we're going to focus on a legendary creature and discuss how to use it as a commander, the archetypes or deck strategies it supports, and maybe even how it could be used as one of the 99. And Sean had the strongest opinion about this, and oh, what a surprise. He's chosen Dragon Lord Silumgar from Dragons of Tarkir.
Yes, yes.
You know what? I was just about to read the card, Sean, but I think if you read the card, our listeners will get the biggest thrill.
So, Dragon Lord Silumgar. He is 4 colorless mana and 1 blue, 1 black to play. He is a 3/5 flying creature with death touch. What? That's brilliant, I hear you say already, but wait, there's more. When Dragon Lord Silumgar enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature or planeswalker for as long as you control Dragon Lord Silumgar.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when this card came out, it was like all my wildest dreams got splashed onto one 3x2-inch piece of pulp. How many thousands of miles away from me? At least seven. You could hear me just going, woohoo! Awesome! Just so happy. So happy. Oh, incidentally, if any listeners are listening that want to donate a free underground sea, it's the only Dimir land I don't own, and you can send it to... No, I'm joking. Back on topic.
Yeah, we're going to need a P.O. box, aren't we?
Yeah. Right, so, Dragon Lord Silum, he ticks all my boxes. In I was running for a while a steel deck, and it was a mono-blue deck. I think I ran Kira Great Glass Spinner as my general.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, and the basic premise of it, I'm just going to put all the annoying blue steel and clone and counter and steel desertion cards into one pile. But it was missing quite a lot because it was monocolored. And that is a long topic for another day. And as soon as this came out, I just saw infinite application for it. The real magical Christmas land point for it, I guess, is to steal someone's planeswalker just before it goes ultimate. For the record, that will never happen because unless you're playing someone that doesn't know what they're doing. Because if I'm sitting with that in the command zone and you're running a planeswalker getting up to its ultimate status, you deserve it to be used against you.
No, it's true though. It's true.
Yeah, I've heard and read various people going, "Oh, I can't wait till they get their Narset Transcendent ready to go," and I'm like, "Yeah, if you do that, you're an idiot. Unless you've got Doubling Season out and you're firing it off immediately, or Chain Veil.
Yeah,
you're a fool. A fool, yeah. I tell you."
That's pretty much the only reason to play a Planeswalker if you've got Doubling Season out or maybe the Chain Veil if one of your opponents is running Dragonlord Silumgar as a general.
Yeah.
So the archetype that you really prefer with Silumgar is it's a control shell, essentially, right? And it's a steal and copy shell because we played this the other night and it was ugly.
You took all my stuff, man.
Yeah, it was ugly in ways I have to talk to my therapist about.
I had a Homeward Path that saved me for a while until you took that.
So I stole the Homeward Path with Take Possession, or Confiscate, I forget which it was. So the deck I built was tentatively titled Thieving Cockney Bastard, the deck. And when I originally built it, I went through Gatherer and just looked up every single card that said take control of target, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Picked out a selection of favorites of them, and then tried to spread the effects so I could hit creatures, enchantments, artifacts, and lands. Now, lands is only one card I can cover that does lands specifically, and that's called Annex. But then there were Confiscate, and there's a couple of others that just control target permanent. The plan being, my deck is only as good as what my opponents play. And I put in a few clones and stuff as well, so if there's something maybe that I couldn't take control of, at least I could have a copy of it as myself. Unfortunately, the deck does fall down horribly if it plays against people who are running very creature-like. Like, it wouldn't have a good time against Narset, for example.
Well, who does?
No, but you do. You are running things like the Clever Impersonator.
That is very true.
Evil Twin...
Yeah, the Evil Twin and the Phyrexian Metamorph.
Yeah, so they're more interesting clones. The Evil Twin's a particularly good clone if you're looking at Dimir, because you can lock it onto someone's commander, and essentially it keeps their commander off the table for the remainder of the game. Because as soon as they play him, you can murder, in the truest sense, their commander. For a blue and a black and tap, destroy target creature that has the same name as Evil Twin, and Evil Twin is a copy of target creature. Which is good fun. The other side of the deck, it does have a small recursion theme for recurring, so Spelltwine, Memory Plunder, which is a Dimir staple. But those cards are there for the reasons of I don't have a lot of those big haymaker finishers that people run that are sorceries in instance. Most of the sorceries. Also, I'm only running a couple of board wipes. Crux of Fate, which is excellent, because if you keep Crux of Fate out, you can keep your Dragon Lord in play if you want. Although that's a double-edged sword if you need him dead. So I can recast, because every group's going to have someone running, well, nearly every group's going to have someone running board wipes. So you've got the recursion themes to steal them if you need. And then the other day, a crowning moment was someone. I love this spell I'm about to mention that I cast. I very seldom see it played in EDH, and I don't really why. Someone cast an Ingaruk's Wake, so I cast Commandeer, stole the Ingaruk's Wake, and cast it myself.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, it was glorious. For those that don't know, Commandeer, it's from Cold Snap, an underrated set. It's 5/2 blue for a blue instant. You may remove 2 blue cards in your hand from the game rather than pay Commandeer's mana cost. You gain control of target non-creature spell. You may choose new targets for that spell. If the spell is an artifact or enchantment, the permanent comes into play under your control. That is a fantastic card if someone's ramping up for a giant one-sided board wipe or a Rise of the Dark Realms or any kind of big game-ending effect. You sit there, you're all mannered down, you've got a hand with some cards in, someone does that, you just go, yeah, I'm doing that now.
How many times do you find you have the mana open for something like Commandeer, though?
Never, but that's why I chuck 2 blue cards to do it.
Got it.
Yeah.
If it didn't have that, I think it would be a fairly poor card. I mean, I do also run Desertion, which is another blue counter spell. Which does something similar, but it can hit creatures as well. So Desertion is also an old card. It's from Visions. It's 3/2 blue for a instant. It says interrupt on my copy. Counter target spell. If that spell is an artifact or a creature spell, put that card into play under your control, although it was just played.
That's pretty good.
I think so. It's a nice surprise. So not only are you casting a spell, you've wasted all your mana to cast it, and it's coming back into play under my control.
You know, because of you playing Desertion the other day, I actually ordered one. I'm holding it tenderly.
Does it smell of the Dimir player convincing you it's the way to go?
It does, but I'm going to use it in my own little red-green-white Timmy fashion.
You're putting Desertion in your red, green, and white deck? I'm impressed.
No, I'm going to play it like I'm a red, green, white player.
Oh, gotcha.
Mostly the red. That's what I like about it. It adds to the chaos of the game. So
yeah. So how the deck wins, though, is it's fairly obvious. It's a control deck in the old-fashioned sense of the word control.
Yes, it's control miserable. Magic.
It's not miserable. You still get to see your cards being used.
Against
it's
you.
It's true, I do.
I'll tell you what, guys, and this goes to both of you sincerely. If there's a combo in your deck, maybe a synergy that you really wanted to see, and I'm using Dragonlord Sengar, tell me about the synergy before the game, and I'll make sure I try and use it.
Mm. That sounds like a great deal.
So did anyone else have a different take on this?
What do you mean by great?
I mean hurtful and ugly.
Yeah.
Well, my take on the deck is, I guess it's control-ish, because I wouldn't call it a control deck. And maybe emphasis on troll. Because my take on it focuses much more on Silimgar's enter battlefield effect, which of course is the steal target creature or planeswalker. I have a couple of cards that are geared toward just outright stealing things. I've got a bribery, and I've got some of the fancier theft cards, right? But mainly what I'm doing is I'm bouncing either cards I'm controlling through Silimgar, and they come back into play under my control, or I'm bouncing Silimgar so that I can grab another creature. Now, grab another creature, you say? Yes, because a large number of the cards in the deck are actually sacrifice outlets. So my take on this is steal and murder, which is, you know, kind of the green approach to Dimir, right? It's just brute force. I'm going to take your thing. I'm going to kill it for some effect that may be just something trivial like Scry 1, and then I'm going to pitch it. And there's also a minor reanimation theme so that if I grab something really good and I eat it for whatever reason, then I can always bring it back. And I actually had Ink Eyes in the sideboard. I know, Nate, you'll talk about Ink Eyes in a minute. But And I went heavy on the blue tutors like Mystical Tutor and actually Merchant Scroll. Plus, there's a lot of Transmute cards, like Muddle the Mixture, right? And Muddle the Mixture is a 2-blue instant counter-target instant or sorcery spell, and you can transmute it for 1 and 2 blue. And what that means is you discard the card, so it goes into your graveyard, and then you search your library for a card with the same converted mana cost as this one. So you can basically pull any 2-mana card out of your deck. And there are a couple in there, and that's mainly ramp at the 2-mana slot. But then you look at a card like the Dimir House Guard, right? And the Dimir House Guard is 3 and a black for a 2/3 skeleton. It has fear, and you sacrifice a creature to regenerate Dimir House Guard, so it's a sac outlet. But it also has transmute 1 and 2 black, and so that lets you pull out any of the four mana cards in the deck, and that includes Disciple of Bolas, Domineering Will, Faceless Butcher, even a Fate Stitcher, Hell's Caretaker, which is an oldie but a goodie. I happen to own a Jace the Mind Sculptor from the Vault 20, and so it lets me pull a Jace, right? And plus Cold Storage, which is a way to remove a target creature you control from the game, and then when you sacrifice it, return each creature card removed from the game under its owner's control, so it's a way for me to cycle Silumgar if I want. Right, and I haven't tested this yet. I haven't even filled out the mana base beyond just putting 38 lands in. But it looks like it would be fun against a lot of different decks, except for Sean's Dragonlord.
So. We'd just be stealing off each other like a pair of thieving.
It's mine, mine, yes. Mine.
Yeah.
Bounce effects are really handy, though.
Yeah. So what bounce effects have you found? Blue black, because I found a lot of bounce effects in white. Obviously, you can't go into white if Stinky is your commander.
Right. So, Rite of Undoing, for example, is an instant that costs 4 and a blue. It has Delve. It's from Fate Reforged, and it's return target non-land permanent you control and target non-land permanent you don't control to their owner's hands. So, you know, basically, it's a way for me to get Silumgar up into my hand and then take some big creature or planeswalker that has a pile of counters on it or some other effect and try to 2-for-1 it, or, you know, otherwise just get it back up into its controller's hand. Obviously not with a, you know, obviously not targeting a creature that has a very good enter the battlefield effect like a Terastodon, except in an emergency. Then there's Silumgar's Command, which is also an instant. It's from Dragons of Tarkir, 3 and a blue and a black, for choose 2, counter target non-creature spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand, target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn, destroy target planeswalker. So if there's a threat that Silumgar himself can't handle by being bounced, then you can murder it, probably, or otherwise clear the deck.
I would add one. I got Cavern Harpy, which is 1 blue and 1 black. It's a creature flying 2/1, and when Cavern Harpy comes into play, return a blue or black creature. Note, it doesn't say target blue or black creature. It just says blue or black creature. Return one that you control to its owner's hand. And if you pay 1 life, you can return Cavern Harpy to its owner's hand. So you can bounce your hexproof stuff and then bounce the Cavern Harpy back and recast your stuff.
Hey, that's a good one, Nate.
All right.
I totally misheard you then, Nate. And what I first heard you say was, tell you something I've got, Cavern Heart Herpes.
that's what I heard too.
Aww.
I was about to say, yeah. I've got a suggestion for deck. It's a Theros card. It's an uncommon Theros. I think it costs all 10 cents. Rescue from the Underwood.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, instant 4 and a black. I've been running this in Kokosho. It's as an additional cost to rescue from the underworld, sacrifice a creature, choose target creature in your graveyard, return that card and the sacrificed card to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of your next upkeep, and then exile returned from the underworld. So you would have to hit Stinky with that one, so you'd lose the thing, but it's good recursion if you've already killed the creature that you I've stolen with Stinky. You can sack him to that, get something else out of your graveyard, steal something else, maybe get Disciple of Bolas back. Mm-hmm. So you bring Stinky and your Disciple of Bolas and the creature from your opponent's side all back into play at the same time. Sack the creature you brought back under your control with the Disciple. And it's all, or even if you don't need the cards in the life, bring something back. So it's like a 3-for-1 almost with the rescues from the underworld. It's 2-for-1, I guess, because you would have already had Stinky. But, sorry, listeners.
Yeah.
Stinky is the name for sort of.
Right. In either of his incarnations.
Yeah. But his Dragon Lord, Silumgar the Drifting Death, his first ever version, he looked like he was drifting on clouds of his own effluent. So, yeah, that's why he gets called that. So Nate, you had an interesting take on this deck.
Yeah, so maybe I play suboptimally by doing this, but I tend to play more tribal and theme decks than you guys do, so, which means that I might take out some good stuff cards to add in more flavor.
Just pause you there. Your tribal scarecrow deck is not suboptimal.
Okay. Yeah, Reaper King is a different animal. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So for Dragon Lord Silumgar, I was thinking of a Crime Lord theme. So he's Crime Lord Silumgar. Because if you look at the card art, he's lounging on his pimp throne, and he's got his henchmen just standing there in front of him.
He's got his pimp necklace as well.
Yeah, he's got a bling.
His Tassiger pimp necklace. And he's just like, what have you come to offer me? So my crime flavor, it's, you know, it keeps a lot of the same sorceries, like, you know, acquire, blatant thievery, bribery. So I added, you know, my team of criminals, like Lazav, Demir Mastermind. He's the 2 blue and 2 black. Legendary shapeshifter, hexproof, and he copies anything that goes in the graveyard.
He's better than that. It goes in the graveyard from any source.
Yeah.
There's an important distinction to other cards that do that.
If it goes into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, you may have him become a copy of that card.
Oh. And he also retains 2 other abilities when that happens, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets the hexproof, and then he gets to do it again.
The hexproof Consecrated Sphinx, and hexproof Prophet of Crucifixes he always became when I used to run a Lazav deck. It used to make me smile so much.
I'm fairly certain Prophet of Crucifix will have its own watch list segment.
I was tempted to name this section, listeners. It was almost called the Prophet of Crucifix Memorial segment. anyway, carry on. So Lazav, yeah, amazing choice, Nate. Amazing.
So we got Lazav in there. We got Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni, as some of the muscle. He's 4 colorless and 2 black. Rat Ninja. And he's got Ninjutsu, which is it's an instant ability where you can pay 3 colorless and 2 black to return an unblocked attacker you control to your hand. So you can bounce your stuff through him. And you put this card in its place, tapped and attacking. And whenever he deals combat damage to a player, you may put target creature card from that player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. So you can steal stuff from other people's graveyards if you're not already stealing them from the battlefield or their deck. And 1 colorless and 1 black, you can regenerate Ink Eyes, and he's a 5/4, which is pretty beefy.
Yeah, Ink Eyes was the first creature that I used from the Vault 20. I picked up when I picked that up, I of course threw Gilded Lotus and Thran Dynamo into my Mimeoplasm deck, and then I was like, wait a second, Ink Eyes, oh my friend.
And whenever you use them, you can scream out Ninja.
Yep, Ninja.
If you're looking at good Ninjutsu cards that are in the Dimir colors, Silent Blade Oni would probably fit in with this deck as well. Are you aware of this card?
No. Probably. Oh. I have a Marrow Noir deck with Relentless Rats, so it's probably in there.
Alright, so let me just read Silent Blade Oni for those that don't know. He's not cheap, so he's a 3 colorless, 2 blue, 2 black. He's a demon ninja. Not just a regular ninja, folks. He's a demon ninja. He has Ninjutsu for 4, a blue, and a black. I forgot to mention, he's a 6/5 creature, so he's beefy as well. Ninjutsu for 4 blue black. Whenever Silent Blade Oni deals combat damage to a player, look at that player's hand. You may cast a non-land card from it without paying that card's mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
Now that fits in both thematically and color-coded to you are doing here, Nate. Quality.
Oh, no, man. That's terrible.
That's awesome.
Terrible, amazing.
Well, terrible because My shopping cart is filling up.
Hey, take a drink.
Oh my goodness! Wait, we can't use those same drinking rules.
Hang
now.
On, I wrote those drinking rules. I can transfer them over wherever I like.
Oh, that just means that you will be the nameless host then.
Oh. All right. Well, if someone else wants to write drinking rules, once we've got a few episodes under our belt, we can. So yeah, Silent Blade only. Quality card fits into this theme beautifully.
All right. Also on the team is Duplicant, which is a 6 colorless artifact creature shapeshifter. And when it enters the battlefield, you may exile, not destroy, exile target non-token creature. And as long as the exiled card is a creature card, Duplicant has that card's power, toughness, and creature types. It doesn't get their abilities and stuff, but it gets their numbers. And it's still a shapeshifter.
That last bit's largely irrelevant now. It's not why he's in your deck, is it?
No, he's a copy and exile instead of copy and just copy or destroy.
It is quite good fun duplicating someone else's Phyrexian Ingester, though. I won't go too deep into that, but those of you that know what Phyrexian Ingester does, lol. But yeah, carry on.
Take their numbers. Since you included a flavor card, the Haven of the Spirit Dragon, I'm going to include the Rogue's Passage as a land, which taps to add 1 colorless to your mana pool, or you can pay 4 colorless and tap it, and target creature can't be blocked this turn. So it's basically a secret passage for flavor.
It's not a bad flavor card, though, for honest.
Yeah, it's good in Voltron Commander decks, which I'm not sure this one is.
But you're going to steal something big and tough and smack people with it.
Yeah, maybe if I steal someone else's commander, and then I could do their commander damage back to them.
I've done that before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
And rounding out the team of criminals is some artifact thieves. We got Theta Adel, Acquisitor, which is 1 colorless and 2 blue, legendary merfolk rogue with Island Walk. And whenever she deals combat damage to a player, search the player's library for an artifact card and exile it. Then that player shuffles their library. Until the end of turn, you may play that card. And she's a 2/2 with Island Walk, so she'll probably get through to if anyone's got blue out there.
Not many people play blue in this format, though. So
No. It's really kind of a neglected color.
Terrible, terrible color. Also is Master Thief, which is 2 colorless and 2 blue. It's a human rogue. And when Master Thief enters the battlefield, gain control of target artifact for as long as you control Master Thief. So he's like a Silumgar power for artifacts.
Yeah, it's good. It's a crying shame that Dak Faden isn't Dimir.
Yeah, he's got that red in him.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, so there's a couple of other thief-type cards.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. What else we got? We got a Gilded Drake, which is 1 colorless and 1 blue. It's flying. And when Gilded Drake comes into play, exchange control of Gilded Drake for target creature one of your opponent controls, or sacrifice Gilded Drake. And he's a 3/3 flying, so you can trade him for anything. And he combos well with things like Mimic Vat, for example.
Oh, Mimic Vat.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Mimic Vat's so good. He also combos insanely well with Equilibrium. If you have Equilibrium out, that is 3 mana. So 2 mana to cast the Drake, 1 mana to activate the Equilibrium for a permanent steal of one of your opponent's creatures. So, those who don't know Equilibrium, it's a blue enchantment for 1 and 2 blue that reads, whenever you cast a creature spell, you may pay 1 colorless and return target creature to its owner's hand. So you cast the Drake, swap control, that triggers the Mimic Vat, and you send the Drake back to its owner's hand, which is you.
Mm.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. The card I was thinking of before was Daring Thief, which is Inspired. It's a 2/3 from Journey into Nyx. Whenever it untaps, you exchange control of target non-land permanent you control with target permanent opponent controls that shares a card type with it. What that would allow you to do is remove the claws that Dragonlord Silumgar has. So you steal a creature with Silumgar, maybe it's not the actual creature you want, you untap the Daring Thief somehow with, you know, shenanigans, and swap it for the creature you do want, and therefore, if you lose Stinky, you keep hold of the creature that you've got, because you swapped with the Daring Thief. And he would fit in with your theme of thief baggery.
Thief baggery. Right.
I was going to say another word that.
Right. That's a good modification.
Yes. Any additions to this one, Phil?
One of my favorite cards in this deck, and bearing in mind that I've got the murder element to it, right?
Yeah.
It's Dragon Lord. The name of my deck is Dragon Lord Stinky Murderer. And for what it's worth, these decks will be up on deck stats, and we'll provide the links to them in the show notes. I love, and I play this in a lot of decks that have blue-black, but Spinal Embrace, right? An invasion rare, 3/2 blue and a single black, and you cast Spinal Embrace only during combat, so it's a trick. Untap target creature you don't control and gain control of it. It gains haste until end of turn. At the beginning of the next end step, sacrifice it. If you do, gain life equal to its toughness. So you bar your opponent's creature that has the biggest butt, which is most likely to be the best creature on defense. So you're casting it during combat, so you move to combat step, Spinal Embrace, and shenanigans happen. I enjoy playing this card because it really kind of turns the tables. They're all like, well, you know what, I got a big fat butt here that you're not getting through, and then all of a sudden, kaboom.
I like this card a lot as well. I didn't put it in mine because mine was trying to keep control of what it was taking.
Yes.
So it got cut for, I think, treachery. But it's a quality card.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. And I think I actually cut, which is interesting, I think I cut treachery in order to put Spinal Embrace in. See, it shows how we're thinking about this. Reality Strobe is also another very fun card. It's a Future Sight Uncommon sorcery. It's 4/2 blue. And it just says, return target permanent to its owner's hand. So this is an expensive bounce, right? Except for the whole Exile Reality Strobe with 3 time counters on it clause. And it also has Suspend 3 for 2 and a blue, which of course means rather than cast this card from your hand, you may pay 2 and a blue and exile it with 3 time counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter. When the last is removed, cast it without paying its mana cost. So it's effectively a recursion, a way to... It's a recursive bounce. So once you fire it off, and it takes a lot of mana, six mana to do it, you've probably got Dragonlord Stinky out. Returns it to my hand. And then, next turn, I play it, and Reality Strobe starts counting down so I can do that again and again and again. Every third turn, I'm guaranteed to have it. Now, 3 turns is a long time to wait, so I doubt this will ever happen more than once or twice, but still.
Yeah, that suspends a mechanic that sits there just threatening and gets quite a lot of power in the politics from saying, this is what I'm gonna do.
That's right. That's right. It becomes a bargaining chip, and people are always like, well, so your suspend is going to rip off is going to go off in a turn. What are you going to do with it? Can we make a deal?
Yeah.
And so it gives you a little bit of leverage. And then, of course, being Dimir, you'll just betray them, so it doesn't really matter what deals you make.
A true Dimir player betrays them without them knowing they've been betrayed.
Right. It makes them think it's their fault.
Yeah. Lets them know why they're dying. But only just at the last moment.
Other fun cards in this one? I think you mentioned this one as well. Vidalkin Shackles. Right? You may choose. It's a 3 mana artifact. The one I own is Modern Masters Mythic Rare. You may choose not to untap Vidalkin Shackles during your untap step. For 2 and tap, gain control of target creature with power less than or equal to the number of islands you control.
Oh, so
for as long as Vidalkin Shackles remains untapped. Yes.
If you have a Rings of Brighthearth, got to take 2 creatures without.
Yeah, the rings will do it.
Yeah, the rings will do the activate ability, yes.
And of course, you know, I'm grabbing creatures and basically running them through my meat grinder for maybe, you know what, maybe I'll take your big expensive 8 mana creature for scry 1 effect. Or maybe I'll sacrifice it and generate 2 colorless mana for it. A card I'm not sure about, oh, and just for kicks, I put Taunos' Coffin in, but I don't own one of those. But maybe I will by the end of the night. It's you may choose not to. It's a 4 mana artifact. You may choose not to untap Taunus's Coffin during your untap step. Exile target for 3 and a tap. Exile target creature and all auras attached to it. Like that matters. Note the number and kind of counters that were on that creature too. When Taunus's Coffin leaves the battlefield or becomes untapped, return the exiled card to the battlefield under its owner's control, tapped with the noted number and kind of counters on it. And if you do, return the exiled aura cards to the battlefield under their owner's control attached to that permanent. I've wanted a Taunos's Coffin for a while because of Mimeoplasm, right? Like, this is a great way to just save Mimeoplasm from a board wipe or something similar. Now, it's an artifact from Antiquities, a rare one, too, so it's not exactly cheap in dollars. And as an artifact, it's especially vulnerable to, let's just call them disenchant effects, right? But also Vandal Blast and so on.
Yeah, that's a nice card. That was one I was literally unaware of, even from back in the day. Wow, look at that. Mm.
So I have one more card before we move on and kind of try to wrap the show, guys. And that's Ghostly Flicker, which is it's a surprisingly good card. And I was thinking about making perhaps a Brago deck, but Ghostly Flicker isn't necessary in a Brago deck, as you know, Sean, since you have a ugly Brago deck as well.
It's not ugly. It's beautiful.
It is. It's beautiful. But Ghostly Flicker is 2 and a blue. It's an instant from Avis and Restored, and it's a common card, so most people overlook it for that reason. But it's exile 2 artifacts, creatures, and or lands you control, then return those cards to the battlefield under your control.
So it's
brutal. It's a Restoration Angel effect where I take control of, you know, somebody's creature with Silumgar, and then I bounce them both with Ghostly Flicker, and I get control of that other card permanently, and Silumgar takes another Planeswalker or creature.
Oh, it does. That's so good.
Yeah, it's nasty. And when I made this deck, this is when I wrote to you, Sean, I said I loathe Dimir.
And I felt like Emperor Palpatine going,
Yes, give in to your anger.
Your journey is nearly complete.
These are just dirty cards.
Mate, I'll have you doing a mill deck by the end of the month.
Oh, yeah. I got ideas for that already.
Oh, Nate. Oh, mill. I love mill.
It's funny you mention that because my last Dimir deck was a Phoenix deck, or at least an attempt at one. And I just didn't have the heart. I couldn't do it.
He is not the commander you want in a mill deck. You want Lazav as the commander in your mill deck.
Yeah.
Because you need a bit of punch with your mill. And he sits there going, yeah, well, you knew about me. Yeah. And a very quick last thing on the Silumgar strategy, or particularly around my deck build on this one. But it would apply to some of your guys as well, because you've got steel effects as well. You have to run some spot land removal, so Tech Edge, Ghost Quarter, Strip Mine. For those of you who look on my version's deck on deck stats, it doesn't have a Strip Mine in it, but it should do, so that's a mistake, because of Homeward Path. Homeward Path will just hose your deck really badly, and you have to be able to destroy it unmercifully, or at least take control of it. One Homeward Path drops, as Nate did to me the other day, didn't you, Nate?
Yeah, I did.
And it stalls you. You just sit there looking for the tutors and the card draw to find something to deal with Homeward Path. I hate that bloody card. Sadly, every commander deck should probably run one.
You know, this reminds me, I actually own 4 Sinkholes. And this is a deck that would definitely benefit from having a Sinkhole in it.
If you want to pop your old limey mate one in the post, and if you don't need 4.
Sinkhole, as I'm sure everyone recalls, is a sorcery that was only printed up through Unlimited. It's a 2 black, and it says destroy target land. It's such a color pie violation by today's standards.
The cheapest one I could find in the UK was £28. That's like $40-ish.
In
pretend running. Wow. I mean, for only a small amount more, you can get Judge Foil.
Wow. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, Judge Foil promos here are $46. And a lightly played Sinkhole is Alpha Edition is $42.91. So my, what are they, the Unlimiteds are $23, right? Maybe I'll take a picture of them for you, Sean.
Oh, I hate you. Sod off back to Naya.
Well, for once, my hoarder's tendencies actually paid off. I have that, you know, I have a lot of old cards, so.
Oh, it's not too bad. The Command Zone podcast, I was listening to one of their episodes. In fact, their most recent episode for when we recorded this about trading up, and
yeah.
Josh talking about the one of the hosts, those of you that don't listen to it, you should listen to it, talking about his big box of jewel lands with a mox in that got sunk in a basement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, water damage.
Oh. Yeah, that is a terrible story. And when if you ever see him while he's relating it, he kind of, you can see he's like, he's trying not to wince, but he's almost come to accept it fully.
That was a gut punch that reached right out across the Atlantic and smacks me where I was.
Oh, it absolutely did. And this guy, he says he had hundreds of dual lands because he was trading for them. And there was that period in the early 2000-aughts where they were banned, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so their price just plummeted. People were selling them for like $3 a piece, and he picked up a whole bunch. And then, to hear that was just, cringeworthy. Yeah.
Oh, Josh, I know we've never met, but I'll drink one for your lost cards. God. This one's for you, Underground Seas.
It's a horrible story. Our next segment would ordinarily be the kind of a message of the week, but this being our first podcast, we're looking to accumulate those. So we want to do shout-outs. We've sort of already started, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Slips through them.
Let's make sure we call it the Command Zone Podcast. Is fantastic. I love listening to that, and it's a highlight of the week, or it was a single highlight of the week. They've recently moved to a format where they are doing two episodes in a single week now. Their total time is about the same, but having it come out on two separate days, it really makes the week kind of go along rather well. And so that's Josh Lee Kwai and Jimmy Wong, and they're both fantastic guys, and they make a fantastic podcast. So I guess, you know, the joke, of course, is if you listen to two podcasts this week, the second one should definitely be Command Zone.
My shout-out would be, okay, stuff. Those of you that don't know, if we're talking Magic community things, my favorite YouTube channel, which is The Mana Source.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Run by the eminently charismatic Wedge. He has that rare breed of being someone that's interesting to listen to and informed, knows what he's talking about. And everything on his channel is great. Particular shout out to his segments or the part of his channel about altered art. I don't know if that's what people are into, but I know Commander players like to pimp their decks out and all that stuff. But he does a lot of features on really good altar artists out there and stuff. And his whole channel is excellent. I highly recommend. Go find them. Search Wedge or The Mana Source.
Yeah, he's really good. I'm hoping someday he'll give us tips on how to sound like we know what we're talking about.
Tips on sounding less like a Cockney wanker.
Nate?
Well, I'm still new, so I'm still learning stuff. But yeah, listeners, if you have ideas, communicate.
There was this podcast called The Five Commanders Podcast you should check out.
Yeah, there's a great backlog of their episodes at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, Phil was obviously a host on that show, but I was a dedicated listener, and that's how I met Phil, and by proxy met Nate. So I'll say it without being as biased as Phil might sound, as he was one of the hosts on that show. The Five Commanders podcast was excellent in its run, and its backlog of episodes are still available on iTunes, Phil?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, still available on iTunes and off of their website, which was thefivecommanders.com. That's weird saying that. Not listening to it. But as a guy getting into EDH, a lot of their episodes I found really helpful and informative. And gave me ideas about what to put in decks and strategy on how to build decks and look at deck doctoring episodes and stuff. So I couldn't recommend.
And personally, they're just really great guys, too. So if you get a chance to meet them on Twitter or on Facebook, the Five Commanders are still kind of watching those and watching those channels and email. I mean, they're great guys, so let's keep in touch with them.
Yeah, and they might have future projects as well. I'll be careful of Phil DeLuca, though. He seemed a bit dodgy to me.
Yeah, he's a scoundrel.
That guy.
What a scallywag.
No Demir Mastermind, though.
No, he's definitely a... Well, how would I describe him? I would describe him as a bit of a total bant.
just give me a hammer. Just give me a hammer, and I will swing it. And I will be happy doing that for hours and hours on end.
Where's my crater hoof behemoth? There it is. Come on out, buddy.
Come on out. We have some tokens to talk to.
And I will take that hammer and smack you back in the face with it. And say, that's why we can't have nice things.
Yes, yes, you do me.
And that's why you can't have nice things. I can take your nice things.
Hey, Rakdos boy, you can smash me in the face with your own hundreds of little things and giggle to yourself like a child in an asylum while you
Yay.
Do.
When it works, it works.
Nate, did you ever figure out what to do with those 76 goblins?
Yeah, I attacked with them.
Hang on, you did something else first. You made 76 more, then attacked
right.
with them.
Yeah, yeah.
76 Cranko. More in order to provide a warm, loving embrace to anyone who attacked you.
I would very much like to discuss that Cranko deck with you one day, Nate. Either on this podcast or in a therapeutic setting.
Perhaps both.
I should explain, listeners. The first time I met Nate, he was introduced to me as kind of a noob to the format by Phil. Oh. And I sat there arrogantly on my throne and went, oh, let's own this bastard then. I'm going to spank him around like the red-headed stepchild he is. And he proceeded to burn my face to death with a billion goblins, 100 dark apostles, and a Reaper King deck, which I still have nightmares of.
Yeah, that's all right. That deck has you've really honed that deck over time, and
yeah,
the recent addition. Yeah, adding the changelings is a nice touch.
Christ, it hurts so much. Oh, I was literally on my knees begging him to kill you the other day, Phil, just so I could buy the time to stabilize and try and deal with it.
Yep. And it worked out for you.
Yeah, it did.
I still maintain that was incorrect target acquisition.
Yeah, probably.
No, you were wrong, Phil. He was very right to kill you.
No, see, he could have killed you and then killed me.
Yeah, but another lesson learned.
Yes.
One day, listeners might meet our mutual friend, listener Pete, I guess. And we have a rule in our meta of kill Pete first.
All right.
But apparently kill Kurt Cobain second is going to be written.
Well, it's the guy who introduced me to Magic, Jesus, 22 years ago, 21 years ago, is Carlos Garcia. And he, my friend Carlos used to say, you know, something like, if Pete, then Pete, else Kurt Cobain.
Well, I think we've probably discussed what we like a lot, because we're now wandering into the realms of, hey, that game was good we played, wasn't it?
Yeah. Hey, remember that guy?
Yeah, he was cool, wasn't he? Yeah. Pete, just for the record, I did not just describe you as cool. So this is a community cast, so how can people get in contact with us?
So I want to thank everybody for downloading and listening. We love to hear from our listeners and hope you'll take the time to contact us. And especially give us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you think we deserve it. And if you don't, then write to us and make sure you tell us why. The 5-star rating really helps us because then we can point to it and we can say, look, everybody loves us. Our legions of fans love us. That in turn allows us to get special promos and prizes in order to give out to you folks, because Wizards loves when people listen to podcasts about their number one product, it turns out.
Yeah.
And after a few episodes, we'll select a few folks who've given us 5-star ratings to win prizes, and of course we'll call you out on the show. You can reach us directly by going to our website, which is www.commanderinmtg.com, and that's commandermntg.com. Our email address is commandermntgpodcast@gmail.com. Sean, you want to tell them what we are on Facebook?
Yeah, I'm going to be the resident Facebook police officer, and we're going to be CommanderinMTG. That's going to be the name of the group, so CommanderinMTG.
Yeah. And it's very classy when you say it, by the way.
CommanderinMTG.
And on Twitter, we are @CommanderinMTG. And then individually, we all have Twitter accounts, too.
Yeah, we do.
On Twitter, I'm @KetJack. That's KETJAK. Yeah, that's my personal one, but I'll start interacting with listeners through it. And Sean?
Cool. I am @Copain26. That's Copain and then numbers 26. Copain26.
Cool.
I am @MrPlorg. MisterPlorg.
Remember, kids, Mr. Plorg, that's his name. That name again is Mr. Plorg.
Someday you'll have to tell our listeners how you got that name.
I don't even know that one.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. We'll save that for maybe episode 2.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
I have one last thing to say, everyone.
Oh.
And, in the style of everyone's favorite anthropomorphized cat, no, not a Johnny, Lion-O, Commanderin. 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 Oh!
Yeehaw!